and welcome to another episode of Artifacts. If you are new to this podcast, I am your host, Rachel Wilson. I'm an elementary educator with over 20 years of teaching experience. My goal is to provide listeners with a brief blast of history and/or science that offers background information and answers questions. It's my hope that listening stirs up great conversation for kids, families, and adults too. I also hope listening motivates you to chase after what you are curious about. If you would like to leave me comments, ask a question, or have an idea of a topic you'd like to hear about, feel free to drop me a line at artifactspodcast@gmail.com. Now that I've returned from a once-in-a-lifetime experience as a Barringer Fellow at the Monticello Teaching Institute, I want to share with you some of the ways this week-long institute has impacted my fellows and myself. First, a little background. Monticello is the home of Thomas Jefferson. It is his home that you see on the reverse side of a nickel. Monticello is a UNESCO World Heritage Site as well as a site of conscience. The museum is not a national park, but rather is owned and operated by the Thomas Jefferson Foundation. Each year, 2-week-long teacher institutes are offered. K through 12 teachers can apply for one of the 30-ish spots. It's a time to soak in the work of the foundation, to accurately depict the community that once lived at Monticello, a time to individually research a related topic, create a lesson for other teachers to access and use, and most importantly, a time to become a part of the Monticello community as teachers. If you are a K-12 teacher interested in a chance to reignite your passion for history and teaching, I highly recommend this opportunity. You can go to my blog and get information. You can also go to the Monticello.org website and find information under the teacher section. The artifact for this episode is the brick. According to Monticello.org, the bricks were made on site beginning in 1769. The following year, Thomas Jefferson moved into the South Pavilion. This pavilion has one room on top and a kitchen below. The limestone for making the mortar was quarried out of his property. Brick making entailed digging, mixing, rolling, and baking. The good news for Thomas Jefferson is that clay is readily available in Virginia. In fact, I remember as a kid playing in the dirt. Often my clothes by the end of the day would be covered in this red clay, and it did stain my clothes as a kid. The clay soil around Monticello is a deep red, which produces a dark red brick. The brick makers would mix the clay with water until it reached a doughy consistency. While the clay soil was easy to find around Monticello, water was not. Until a well was dug, people had to carry water up the little mountain to the worksite. Then they would roll the clay mixture in sand and pack it into a wooden mold. The mold would be set out on the ground to dry. From what I've read, the stacking and turning of bricks was often work for boys. The bricks would have weighed as much as 8 pounds each when wet. When they were dry, they would be placed in a kiln for firing, which would also be located on the property. When my cohort arrived at Monticello, or Little Mountain, we really enjoyed a special tour of the house to get us acquainted with Jefferson and each other, followed by a dinner on the North Terrace. I gotta tell you, this was just a fabulous, magical experience for us. This dinner gave us time to meet leading Jeffersonian experts and soak in the breathtaking views of Monticello and the surrounding acreage at sunset. Each day was filled with opportunities to see other facets of life at Monticello and the surrounding area. We had tours of the gardens, tours of Mulberry Row, the original University of Virginia campus, as well as tours of Highlands, the home of James Monroe. We had the privilege of spending a day at Montalto, where we met with Monticello archaeologists and were privileged to hold artifacts that are over 200 years old. We spent a great deal of time discussing the relationships at Monticello, including the unknown dynamic between Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings. The staff at Monticello, as well as those at the Jefferson Library and UVA, were so patient with us. They were so welcoming, and they really helped us find answers to the questions we had as we researched our topics. Each fellow came with a topic in mind for their lesson. However, we were given the freedom to modify them or even change completely if we felt we needed to go in a different direction. From my perspective, the week was quite organic. Fellows were sharing ideas and wrestling with tough concepts the whole week, and fellow objectives and plans did change. But it was a good thing in response to their own growth and journey throughout the week. There was a mix of active learning and research throughout the week and a real sense of camaraderie within our group. On the final day of our week together, we met in the morning to celebrate each other's research and final product. I asked my fellow participants to send me their big takeaways from the week to share with you. Many had the same idea that I did, and it's really in the brick, which I will save for the end. I think any teacher of social studies can benefit from thinking about these five takeaways this year as we go back into the classroom. First, be patient with your students and their journey of wrestling with tough history. Even as history teaching adults at Monticello, we began our week with creating a safe place to work out our own understandings of the lives of enslaved people at Monticello and their relationships with the Jefferson family. As we experienced some tours among tourists visiting Monticello, we were impressed by all the docents' abilities to answer guests' questions with patience and graciousness. The tour guides really modeled for us the flexibility and respect we need to have with our students as we teach history that is sometimes uncomfortable, incomprehensible, and painful even. We grappled with the dynamics between Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings, which brings me to point number two. Number two, be okay with the unknown. Boy, is that easier said than done. Accept that you may never know some of the answers. This one was tough for some of us too. There are some details about Jefferson's life that we may never know. Did he have a frosty relationship with his parents? What did Sally Hemings look like? What did his children by Martha really think about his children with Sally? Was Sally just making the best of a tough situation? And of course the question, did they love one another? As an elementary teacher, I found it interesting that these are the same types of questions my students have asked me in past years. And the truth? We just don't know. So although we need to be comfortable without the answers to these specific questions, we also need to be comfortable with talking about the whole narrative, not just the easy parts. Takeaway number three, remember that history is more than just dates, places, and names on a timeline. It's where we've been, and it's also a chance to decide where we're going. Someone recently commented to me that they feel children don't care about history anymore. I disagree. Children, teens, adults, we all still care about history, and we need to see the relationships found inside the stories of the past. Relationships between ourselves and historical figures, relationships between our struggles and the struggles of the past. We rob our students and ourselves of empathy building and critical thinking when we leave out the difficult parts or we only tell parts of the story. Students need to see the people of history for who they are, flaws and all, relating to one another, struggling, and overcoming obstacles. In order to do this, we have to make sure we're telling the whole narrative. I think as teachers today, we are all struggling with the time constraints and miles of information to cover, but the truth is we can't afford not to take the necessary time to share everyone's story that's part of the narrative. It's the human experience that hooks children in. One of my MTI fellows and friend, Angela Kitzman, said in her reflections, quote, "My big takeaway from our week on the Little Mountaintop was the idea of legacy. According to Merriam-Webster Dictionary, legacy means something transmitted by or received from an ancestor or predecessor or from the past. Monticello itself leaves a legacy of all the people who lived and worked at Monticello. We should never stop learning, and we should strive to be as passionate as Jefferson in our quest for knowledge, so in the end, we too can create our own legacies to be handed down to the generations."
I think Angela's comments reinforce the necessity of telling the whole story, as Monticello is not just the legacy of Thomas Jefferson, but of all the families and individuals who lived and worked there. Legacies are complex, messy even, and they cannot be summarized in just a few snapshots or short stories. My roommate and fellow Carla Sally wrote, quote, "Thomas Jefferson was a very complicated man, like many inventive men are. He was a slaveholder who wrote that all men are created equal. We know that was not what he actually thought, because it meant white men over 21 that owned property. It left out people of color, women, and poor white men. We celebrate his words, but we need to continue to work towards making them true for all people. He even had a difficult time practicing this with the people he referred to as family. For him, family included the people he had enslaved, yet their idea of family was very different." Carla's reflection really ties together the idea of telling the whole story, as Angela also believes, and examining the shortcomings and flaws of the past as a way to work towards a better future.
The fourth point I want to make is to be mindful of the words you use in your classroom this year. To be more specific, we focused on the way we discuss slavery and how it's being discussed at Monticello. Calling someone a slave is calling out what was done to a person. It strips a person of their identity, their individuality, and their dignity. Changing the language to enslaved nailer or enslaved bricklayer celebrates an individual while also recognizing their situation at Monticello. Instead of saying runaway, use escape. I'm sure there are many other areas of our language outside of the subject of slavery that we really should examine and choose more carefully to convey meaning more accurately. My fifth and final thought about our time at Monticello centers around the artifact I identified as the brick. Several of my colleagues and I have been to Monticello a number of times before this special week. On my first visit, we parked where the gardens are now. The tour was really just a beautiful house tour. What is now identified as one of two rooms that would have belonged to Sally Hemings was a bathroom where I remember washing my hands. In the past, when I took the house tour, I was seeing broad brushstrokes of life at Monticello, a completed American architectural marvel with a breathtaking view. But this visit was different. This visit, I got up close and uncomfortable. On this visit, I got to touch the building's bricks, walk among the flowers and vegetables. J. Henry, a Barringer fellow and friend, sent me his experience with the bricks. He wrote, quote, "On the afternoon when our projects had been finished, I went back up to the mountain and roamed around the property. At one point, I went back to that corner of the house where we had seen the fingerprints in the bricks in order to take more photos. While I was there, a mom and her two sons came up wondering what I was doing. I showed them the fingerprints. I asked one of the boys how old he was. He said 9. He thought that was pretty neat. To me, it was painful. 9 years old, enslaved, building Jefferson's home." As my new friend Candel Richmond says so well, in the time I spent there, I discovered that the untold story of the enslaved community is all around if you just look for it. It's in the joinery, chimney that still stands, the remains discarded in trash pits, the expertly crafted furniture in the house, bricks inlaid in the house bearing the fingerprints of the maker, almost as signatures across time. We may not be able to read the words of those who lived and toiled at Monticello, but we can feel the stories from what they have left behind. Let's take a break for a word from our sponsor. I hope you have gotten the sense from this episode that the Monticello Teacher Institute of 2019 was such an enriching experience for me and my fellows. I don't want you to just take my word for it. I do have a little bit of a guest speaker here. My friend Mitch is going to share with you his takeaways from this wonderful experience.
There are two main takeaways that I've been talking to my fellow teachers about since I returned from Monticello. Number one, don't just refer to Jefferson's Monticello. I have learned the story and will be passing it on to my students about the enslaved at Monticello and what an integral role they had in Monticello. Also, I have been stressing to my fellow teachers what an amazing experience it is to go to one of these professional developments and to meet teachers from all over the country. That has definitely been a highlight, and I have been talking about that incessantly to my fellow teachers. This is Mitch Kalin from Las Vegas.
To close out this episode, I want to say a big thank you to all my fellows who cooperated with me on this episode, collaborated with me, came up with ideas, emailed me, sent me some audio clips. I really appreciate the project. And I really hope that everyone that has listened to this episode takes advantage of a great educational experience that Monticello does have to offer. So I want to make sure that you know of different ways that your classroom or your family can experience Monticello. You can go to Monticello, take your own tour and see what we're talking about. There are plenty of tours available pretty much every day. And if you visit the website, monticello.org, you can get more information about scheduling your trip there. If you are a teacher and are in the Virginia area where you could take a field trip, I highly recommend it. The staff at Monticello have wonderful programming in place. There are beautiful updated classrooms at the Visitor Center. There's also a great discovery room with lots of hands-on activities. In fact, I spent a morning there with another fellow. She and I were really enjoying playing around with the polygraph machine and the decipher wheel. If you don't live close, you can still take advantage of the Monticello experience by scheduling a virtual field trip. I have done this in the past with my fifth graders. It was a wonderful experience to really zoom in at Monticello inside the house, but also to have a really nice conversation as a class with staff at Monticello. And my experience was staff are very willing to be flexible with whatever your focus is in your classroom, whether it is Monticello, the architectural side of things, or Thomas Jefferson's life, or the life of the enslaved people, or even the Lewis and Clark expedition. Definitely want to go visit the website and check that out. Also, for teachers, there are lots of lesson plans that have been put together by staff at Monticello and also by other fellows from other years that have been a part of the Monticello Teacher Institute. So you should definitely head over there. You can find some primary source documents. You can find resources, activities, and lesson plans. It's very well organized and easy to navigate. Finally, if you are a teacher listening, I highly recommend this Teacher Institute. Put it on your list for the 2020 summer. Head on over to the Monticello.org website under the Educators area. And very soon, I think you'll be seeing the applications for the 2020 summer. Again, I just want to thank everybody that contributed to this episode, and I appreciate everyone that listens to my episodes and gives me feedback. Feel free to email me if you have a suggestion for an upcoming episode, or if you have questions about this or previous episodes. You can email me at artifactspodcast@gmail.com. You can also head on over to my blog and get information about the sources that I used for this episode as well as previous episodes. My blog is found at artifactspodcasthome.wordpress.com. As always, thank you for listening to this another episode of Artifacts Podcast.